Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning. And today my guest is Mary Padilla, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Armonk, New York. Armonk is a northern suburb of New York City. And we're going to talk today on the general topic, what is it that Alexander Technique teachers do when they teach? Our conversation kind of stems from a book, a little booklet that Mary produced, and it's also available on her website, called Free Agent, Learning to Teach by Teaching, in which she describes a project she undertook in her final semester of teacher training in New York City. And it's a fascinating read, and she has set about addressing a number of very basic questions about what Alexander teachers do. And she says she wanted to know, what are we doing to people when we teach them the Alexander technique? Mary, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Mary, could you give our listeners a very short description or definition of the Alexander technique?
I think that about 5% of what we are is consciously known to us, and its attempt to go from the tip of the iceberg and make the acquaintance of the rest of ourselves.
And that's important, because the rest of ourselves has quite an impact on how we live our lives. I assume that's why we'd want to do it, right?
Yes, and out of interest.
Out of interest, yeah. Uh-huh. So you, as I mentioned, completed teacher training, and like most Alexander Technique teacher training programs, there is some kind of practice teaching that's involved, usually towards the end. But you kind of took it to a new level. Could you, first of all, say a little bit about what you were interested in discovering and how you proceeded to do what you could to discover that?
Well, out of an interest in consciousness, what that is and so forth, and what is the mind and what is this process of mind-body education, I wondered what was the correspondence or correlation, if any, between what I was thinking and what I was doing or non-doing as a teacher and the experience of the student. Because we are in our own experiential worlds, and so we have no way of really knowing what's going on with the other person in any context, let alone an Alexander Technique lesson. And so what went on was, I thought we needed some sort of attempt to find out what my experience was and what was the simultaneous experience of the student. And I had started in January, and so my last term actually occurred after the summer break. And having had a little bit of supervised teaching in the spring, I then had the summer off before my last term in the fall. What happened in the fall was that, I was going to conclude and I was going to have supervision again, but I was kind of on my own for the summer. So I was able to rent a little cottage and to teach and set it up. And I offered free lessons. I offered a series of 10 free lessons to people. And the only thing that I stipulated was that at the end of the lessons, they were to give me a single page describing their experience. It didn't have to be in words. It could be drawing, painting, whatever, some other art form. But I wanted some representation of what it had been for them. And then at the same time, this was a 10-week process, every week I wrote a little essay and I did a little piece of art. And at the end, I put the two together.
Mm-hmm. And did you find that there was a correlation between what you thought was going on and they thought was going on?
A correlation. Well,
maybe that's the wrong word to use. A connection of some sort.
I think Alexander teaching is all about connection. And what is it that we are conveying, and what is it that we're reacting to when we are teaching, and it's a back and forth sort of process, and we become aware of their reaction, and we react to their reaction. So in that sense, yes, I had a reaction, they had a reaction. They didn't all have the same reaction. Everyone was an individual, and everyone had an individual experience. And it wasn't the classical forward and up, lengthen and widen. You know, it wasn't within the little box that you might think, the sort of physical parameters and so forth. There were many other dimensions.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of this experiment, did you feel you had a better fix on the answer to the basic questions you were asking of yourself?
What is it that we should seek to do as teachers? I think we should seek to evoke what is in the student, not to put anything there. It's not a tabula rasa. It's like all education, really.
Mm-hmm. And how about the basic question you were asking, which is, what are we doing to people when we teach them the Alexander technique?
I think we're helping them to become aware of their potential. And I think we're helping them to learn ways of accessing it.
Mm-hmm. And that take on it emerge from your teaching experience that summer?
It became clear that it was many different dimensions. Mm-hmm. This was not solely a sort of neuromuscular affair. Mm-hmm. This had mental components. This had emotional components. In the moment, in the teaching room, they're on the spot. And to stop them and say, okay, what is your experience, is a bit much. And I think very influenced by the fact that they are, you know, there and you are there, and it all has to happen as an instant reaction. When they have time to think about what's going on with them, I think that also helps them decide what they want to get out of it and what they are getting out of it, and to reflect on that. In my own lessons, my first teacher, I have every 10 lessons, I've written a little page on where I am now and what has changed and that sort of thing. And it was sort of a chance to do that.
Right. You know, it kind of reminds me of an incident that happened to me back in when I was training many years ago in London. I used to, whenever there was an Alexander teacher giving a talk on the technique, I'd go see it because I was real curious to see how teachers presented this to the public. And I can very clearly remember one talk. There may have been 20 or 30 people there. The teacher did a little hands-on work with somebody. And someone in the audience raised their hand and said, "What are you doing when you're putting your hands on that person? What is going on?" And the teacher, in this case, didn't really have a good answer. The questioner was, I think, left in the dark. And I remember sitting there thinking, well, I have no idea either. I'd be curious to know the answer, too.
Uh-huh.
Does that resonate at all with your own personal experience of teaching or having had lessons earlier?
I think that's a major question that you have to address as a trainee. Mm-hmm. I think what it's all about is kind of thinking your way through what you're doing and why and how. And because it's fresh, because it's kind of your first real encounter with being on the other side of the table, you know, that sort of thing. You have the perspective of the beginner still, and you also have the perspective of the beginner teacher. And the beginner's mind is a good thing.
And there really, at least in my experience, there's no quick, short answer to that question. It sort of emerges, the answer emerges in your own mind as you go through the training process. And I assume that something like that happened with you as well.
Well, I felt that I needed some sort of model. I wouldn't be able to go out and present this to someone else. I mean, the way you learn something is when you try to teach it, I think, in every field. Mm-hmm. And so it was up to me to figure out what was going on. Because of my background, I wanted to have some kind of biomedical idea mm-hmm. of what was happening. And then, of course, there were additional ramifications mentally and emotionally that I wanted to get some kind of handle on by looking into, well, what's called these days neurophilosophy. You know, we know a lot more about the brain than we did 30 years ago and how things function. And it's coming to the point where I think we can start to put the pieces together. And that was an attempt that I was making at that point.
Mm-hmm. Or, and I guess I should have mentioned earlier that you have a background in science, that you have a BA in biochemistry and a PhD in microbiology. So that's an unusual background, I think, for Alexander Technique teachers. And in a way, it seemed like what you were doing in your summer experiment was applying the scientific experimental method to this whole question of what's going on during a lesson, what's going on with the teacher, what's going on with the student. But it's a scientific method applied in a situation where each encounter is different. So it's not like you have, it's not like a typical, say, chemistry or physics experiment where everything's pretty standardized.
Well, in a way, a lot of things are held constant. Okay, mm-hmm. You have the same basic principles, mm-hmm. you have the same basic technique, hands-on, mm-hmm. and so forth. Mm-hmm. And what's different is how the individual student runs it through his own nervous system, runs mm-hmm. it through his own background, his own experiences, his own perspective, his own context. And that kind of is the interesting piece. Because, you know, Alexander did the same thing. He had a problem to solve, and he tried to simplify it down to what was really going on and causing a problem, you know, and the mirrors and the self-observation, and trying to say, well, if I change this, what happens here, and that sort of thing. That's what the students are doing. They leave the teaching room, and they go out, and they say, ah, well, here I am in this situation, and I could do it the usual way, or what happens if I change this? Mm-hmm. And then they come back and they report, you know what happened last week? And you know how it... And so it's to encourage them not to be passive in this. This is a way of teaching them how to use this in their lives.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make about Alexander. And of course, he wrote in some detail about his exploratory process. I don't think, at least as far as I know, that there's been anything really like that since, until perhaps your own investigation. Would you agree with that, or do you know of other examples?
No, actually, I think it's been sort of it's become sort of received wisdom to be applied by each individual in his own style, mm-hmm. but without really questioning the basic premise.
Right, and that's kind of what you've done.
In a way, I wanted to look at the implications of this because, you know, I think he was wise in a way, although he may not have done it for the right reason, when Dewey wanted to do research on what was really happening, quote-unquote really, and he refused. And I think the level of understanding at that point of the appropriate physiology and so forth was not going to be useful. It was mm-hmm. just going to tie things in knots. But I think now, you know, we can go back with sort of informed sense of all of that and do another low-tech experiential thing. Mabel Todd, you know, wrote her book, what, 70-something years ago? Mm-hmm. But because she kept it at a phenomenological level, it's still relevant today. William James, Principles of Psychology, 100-plus years ago, still meaningful because he didn't tie it in to what would now be obsolete physiological models of what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is an opportunity to take that phenomenological approach and look at what happens in the Alexander situation because it is so multifactorial. It is hard to isolate a single variable and so forth and do a different kind of experiment looking into what is going on that would be meaningful. I thought about it. I tried to think of something. Mm-hmm. And this is what I came up with, which is not you know, very hard science-y.
Yeah, but speaking of hard science, it does seem that developments in neuroscience are a particularly fertile area for investigating the Alexander technique, and you alluded to the work of I'm not sure how to pronounce his name.
I think it's Tim Cacciatore.
Cacciatore, who's an Alexander technique teacher and a PhD in neuroscience, who lives in London now, and he's developed a way of actually measuring postural tone. I don't remember all the details of it, mm-hmm. but he and colleagues developed a methodology for doing that, which really didn't exist until they created this amazing machine called the Twister.
Right. His collaborator was, you know, doing that part, and they put the two pieces together, I think.
Right.
Yes.
And just in general, neuroscience just seems like a perfect field, because even for the last several years, you'll hear statements from neuroscientists using the very term Alexander coined, inhibition, to describe what they would often regard as the most important function of our brains, is to inhibit, in Alexander's terms, which doesn't mean repress a la Freud, but means just making a decision not to do certain things or not to choose certain paths.
Well, we have a lot of what used to be called central sets. I think they're all new terminology now, mm-hmm. but the basic idea is linked series of nerves that will carry out a series of coordinations together. So that in the beginning, if you're a baby and you're trying to figure out how to pick up your head, that's one thing. But ultimately, you'll pick up your head, you'll stand up, you'll go, you'll open the door. The minute you think of opening the door, it all kind of falls together and it's very efficient and so forth. If, however, it's not being done in an optimal way, but it's being done in a way that you kind of copied from your primary caretakers, who copied it from the way their parents did it and so forth, and you want to change that to be more physically, et cetera, efficient, you do have to remember not to fall into that habitual pattern, mm-hmm. and to, you know, choose another way and to prioritize certain other characteristics. Tim Cacciatore did a lot and is doing a lot of neuromuscular type work, and that's one thing. The consciousness piece, not so much.
Right. But the interesting thing about what he's doing is it is very quantifiable.
Absolutely. And okay. He has parameters he can measure and isolate and just change one thing. Yes.
And that's something that, as far as I know, is virtually absent from all previous scientific or medical studies of the technique. The one exception might be a breathing study done at Columbia I can't think of his name, lung capacity in the Alexander mm-hmm. technique. But mm-hmm. in general, even large-scale studies like the relatively recent British Medical Journal study, large-scale, randomized control groups and all of that, is still dealing with people's self-reporting on what they notice about back pain. It doesn't have, it's not really, it's measurable, but not with the precision that Tim's studies have been.
Well, it's qualitative.
It's qualitative, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And so this is a more objective, quantitative, very meaningful and very needed look at what goes on in the technique, absolutely.
Oh, I agree totally. Can you imagine further experiments along the lines that you conducted? Perhaps by other teachers or by yourself?
At this point, I don't know. I'm not sure what would be of value. So I'm going to say, no, I don't have any more ideas at the moment. I'm sure that someone else can come up with something meaningful, and that would be great.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything else that you would like to mention before we we bring our conversation to a close?
Well, I think we can use this as a means of mind-body awareness that can be of significant value when we apply it to the things that we want to do mm-hmm. in our lives.
And hopefully some other Alexander teachers or trainees listening to this might think, well, at the very least, maybe I could replicate this study, perhaps under a different set of different kind of conditions.
Yeah, I think it's good to find out what your students are thinking.
Yeah, yes. It certainly is. Well, my guest today has been Mary Padilla, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Armonk, New York, north of New York City. If anything that we've talked about intrigues you and you'd like to get hold of Mary, we'll put a link to her website by the interview. And we'll also put a link to a website where you can locate an Alexander teacher anywhere else in the world and find out more about the Alexander Technique in general. Mary, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Okay, thank you.